Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Science and the Paranormal with Dr. John DeSalvo and Lady Veronica, live from the studios of liveparanormal.com. And unfortunately, Veronica can't make it tonight, so you're just stuck with me without a co-host. But next week, we're going to do something special. We're not going to have a guest next week, and Veronica is going to question me about my research and be the skeptic. And we're going to talk about everything from my research into magic, mysticism, the Great Pyramid of Giza, Shroud of Turin, anything, though, even voodoo, anything's open. We're not planning anything at all. It's going to be totally what she wants to ask me. And we hope you also call in with questions because you're able to do that. You can call in on what's the call-in number? I think it is, well, I'll have to get that for next week. So I don't know how much time, we probably don't have time for call-ins for this show. But what I wanted to do is our very special guest tonight, who's been a good friend of mine for many years, is Deborah Presley. And we're going to talk about her childhood, her adulthood, the reason she believes she's the daughter of Elvis Presley and her earliest memories and whatever she wants to talk about. We don't plan ahead on this show. We don't have any agenda. But Deborah has been a guest on previous shows of mine on other networks and has always been one of my favorite guests because she's so interesting and has just so many wonderful stories to tell, and it totally fascinates me. I wanted to take a kind of format's going to be when we do have guests on and Veronica's not on, is to take the first 10 minutes or so to talk about maybe anything in the news that would be of interest that in terms of the paranormal and science, or, you know, questions that people have written to me during the week. I'm not going to do that tonight, but what I want to do is give out some contact information and then just mention a little bit about why I was interested in Elvis Presley. But for those of you who want to reach me, and if you have any questions you'd like me to address or suggest the topics for the show, is my website or the association's website. I'm director of the Great Pyramid of Giza Research Association, which is probably the largest private research group in the world studying the Great Pyramid. Probably. I don't know if there's a larger one. But we're on GizaPyramid.com. Real simple to remember. GizaPyramid.com. GizaPyramid.com. And you could just click on where it says email the director and email me. The Great Pyramid of Giza Research Association website is pretty cool. There's, like, you know, hundreds of articles. It's obviously all free. I was involved, one of the scientists involved with the Shroud of Turin. I was involved with the initial research team, and then I formed an international team asked by Father Rinaldi, who was the one instrumental in allowing the 1978 studies of the Shroud. And on my website, or not my website, the association's website, there's a link that says Shroud of Turin. And I have a long Shroud tour with photos that were I've given permission to use, who was the chief documentary photographer in Turin in the 1978 studies. And I was involved with the image formation process using three-dimensional reconstruction and comparing the image to different spectral analysis. And at one time, by the way, after the testing, I had sticky tape samples from the Shroud in my possession. The authorities at that time wouldn't allow the team to take any, like, you know, cut samples, but a special hydrocarbon tape was developed where you could put it up to the Shroud and put it against the material and kind of rip it off, like, you know, putting a piece of scotch tape against a piece of cloth and pulling it away. And what you come away with is fibers and material that's on the Shroud. And they allowed the team to do a bunch of those. And I had group of those in my possession. And what was really cool was that one of those was actually a blood sample from the shroud, one of the fibers that had blood on it. And I would joke and say that if this really is the burial cloth of Jesus, I am actually holding in my hands the blood of Jesus. So now obviously I couldn't keep those. I had to send them back, but they were sent to us to do some research that I was involved in. And, you know, I forgot that almost, you know, lose track of time, Easter Sunday. I could have, maybe I should have done a show on the shroud. Maybe I'll do that next week instead of question and answers. I'll have to think about it. But so please, I'm also very active on Facebook, just John DeSalvo. And you can't miss me. I got a hat, sunglasses, and it says 007, and I'm in Maple Lake, Minnesota. So I would suggest if you're really interested in the stuff we talk about and you have questions for me, and I usually answer all my messages, so feel free to write. But my Facebook site is for friends only, so you have to send a friend request and mention, you know, you heard me on liveparanormal.com radio, and I will accept you as a friend. And I think I'm always posting the teaching materials and information about mysticism and metaphysics and science. Now, for new listeners, I am a biophysicist. I have a PhD in biophysics, and my specialty was neurophysiology. But I've studied the paranormal for over 30 years. I've been into everything. I don't think there's hardly anything out there in the paranormal. Well, I wasn't into the dark areas in most cases. But I've got a pretty wide knowledge of what's out there, and I'm a skeptic. I'm a believer, but I'm a skeptic. So that's important to point out. I'm going to wind this up in the next minute or two and bring Deborah on. But I guess a good term is I'm an open skeptic. I believe in the paranormal. I mean, I would be a hypocrite if I didn't. I wrote 10 books on it, published by Barnes & Noble and Inner Traditions. And I've been on probably half a dozen or more shows of Ancient Aliens and the Nostradamus Effect and a lot of History Channel stuff. So you may have seen or heard me there. So I do believe in the paranormal, in the metaphysical, and the psychic, but I believe it has to be approached in a scientific manner and studied analytical. Because, you know, somebody comes up to me and says, I'm a shifter. Never can say that right. I would say, okay, well, prove it to me. I'm going to tell you I'm from the Galactic Council on Planet X. Do you believe me? Or I live on the dark side of the moon. These claims are made all over the place today. It kind of really ruins it for serious researchers. So always ask for evidence, proof, and data when you hear these new age claims. And I think that's really important. I didn't mean to digress, but I've been a college professor most of my life, and I always tell students to don't assume anything and be skeptical and ask the right questions. And I think that's lacking in the new age. And if we had more of that, I hate the term new age, but for a better term, you see, the academics don't accept us, but the new age people accept everything, and you need to be in the middle. So I got my philosophy in, I guess, for tonight. And what I would like to do is bring Deborah on, because if I get her mic on here, and welcome her to the show. Hello, Deborah. How you doing tonight?
After just hearing that, Dr. John, it's like, whoa, you're going to talk to me after just talking about all that? Amazing. Yeah, I'm doing better than fine. I just can't even believe what I just heard. Wow. Like, I'm honored to speak to you about the shroud.
Well, thank you.
You know, I haven't read that book. You know, we know the story is that that was the final book he took in for his final earthly experience as what he became.
Right.
So, and before, I don't know if it was transitioning material or just something he wanted, you know, us to know about. But at any rate, I'm just fine. How are you?
Oh, great. Yeah, I forgot to tell the story. See how I always get carried away. Typical absent-minded professor, right? You start with a lesson plan.
Yeah, exactly.
And you go,
exactly.
But
brilliance at its best. Where are your car keys?
Yeah. You know, in 30 seconds, I'll just tell it real quick. Years ago, a friend of mine on Facebook said, I heard that Elvis in his last moments had your book in his hand. And I said, what? Elvis who? Who are you talking about? You know? And they said, Elvis Presley. That because I wrote a book on the Shroud with Frank Adams called Sin and the Layman's Guide to the Shroud of Turin. But it seemed previously Frank had a prototype book that he then incorporated into our book together as co-authors. And that prototype book, supposedly, I think you're the one who told me the story that Elvis asked one of his close friends to find him the best book on the Shroud. Is that right?
Yeah. Larry Geller was a man that was his spiritual brother that thought outside of the realm of most people, and he would bring him trunks of books. Like when he would go to Memphis, mm-hmm. he would have trunks of books from the Bodhi Tree. So he was very specific about his books, and as you know, I don't know if you know, but he spent most of his time studying spirituality and, you know, trying to figure it all out, and he was that way even before he became famous, because my mom met him when he was 19, and my mom was part of the Universal Life Religion, and my father's mother, mm-hmm. unbeknownst to the people around him, was part Jewish. And so there was some Kabbalist, you know, some other, we could call it magic for lack of a better word, but religious, you know, for, higher truth, let's call it that. And so he was fascinated by everything that you're talking about. And he did have that book. And like I said, he and my mom both believed in reincarnation in 1954 in North Carolina and Tennessee, if you can imagine. So they knew the ancient stuff, so it kind of made sense to them, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well,
which is unheard of in the South.
Yeah, I mean, I heard also that Elvis was reading a lot of metaphysical books in the last few months. Before
not just the last
happened.
Few months, all of his life. Yeah, that's what he
really?
Spent most
I
of his time
that.
Doing when he wasn't singing. Yeah, he was more of a spiritual being than actually, I think, a creative artist. I mean, he was a great singer, but his spirituality was, he really and truly, you know, he could walk into a room and people would see the light change. And my mother, and I've had people tell me that, you know, before he was famous, he was extraordinary and his understanding even before he became a household name.
Interesting. You know, I years ago when I first heard about this too, and I got to admit, I never really was an Elvis fan. You know, I was a musician, a jazz musician, and more into that aspect of it, obviously. And always admired Elvis Presley, but I was never been a big fan because it just wasn't my music that I was really into. But I contacted, after I heard about my book, the prototype book, I contacted somebody, I can't remember his name, you probably would know who was selling a lot of memorabilia from that Elvis owned, and there was a bunch of books that he had, and one of them was, I think it was the Bhagavad Gita, you know, the Eastern
yes,
scriptures.
Exactly,
and it was
and
underlined.
Also he had
yeah, what else?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
And he had a lot of Yogananda self-realization. He was really into self-realization and all of that's true. It's funny because so many, you know, people think they know him and actually think that they own him in many ways, but a lot of people are unaware of his spiritual connection.
That's interesting. Well, you know, it's the guy I said, was there any notes in the, and you have any books with any notes of Elvis? Because I thought, now that would be great to have, right? To see what his thoughts were, but he said, no,
actually, when I first got to Los Angeles, the first night I was here, I came here specifically to find Larry Geller because he had just written a book called The Spiritual Journey of My Father. And in that book, he wrote it with Jess Stern. You know Jess Stern, the astrologer.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So let me say, yeah. So this is 1970. When did I? No, it was 1980 when I saw the book. But anyway, my point is that this talks about all of that, and it's simple but true. And every, you know, his music is really what, you know, everybody wants to know about. And as far as I go, talking about evidence and, you know, always question. Trust me, nobody questions things more than I do. And so what happened is when I did go into court. in Memphis back in, was that like 88? I had originally not just, I didn't want to tell anyone. And the man I was married mm-hmm. to decided he would go to the tabloids. And so he sold my story. So I just figured, you know, I'll make friends with these people since they're going to be following me around. And so, not for a long time, but still. And I lost my train of thought. Okay, so what happened was I found a cousin, a first cousin. My mother kept telling me, you know, that there was a cousin with him and when she first met him. But she would get what she called amnesia under pressure. So when I would start asking her questions, she would, you know, oh, I get amnesia, honey. I can't talk about it or whatever.
Wow.
So, yeah. So anyway, forgot what my point is. So I was reading some books. Ooh, a sparrow just almost flew in my car. Hold on. Okay. So I was reading some books, and there was one named by a guy named Monty Wayne Nicholson, and he was a former sheriff in L.A. County, and apparently he was at the house on August 15th and got some photographs of someone that seemed to look a lot like my father getting onto a helicopter, and he was chased around and ended up, you know, pictures went away and he kept going, and he wrote a book called The Presley Arrangement. It was a fictionalized version of what I'm telling you about. So anyway, I found him, and so he took me down to, he knew that I was going to court and I was filing for a petition to determine heirship. So my attorney, who was 42 and vibrant on a Friday, was dead by a Sunday, and so I had to fly to Memphis and found somebody just off the cuff. Yeah, you know, I guess that happens sometimes. So right before we went to court.
Timing.
So anyway, so I got another attorney, and unbeknownst to me, he went in and filed a petition to determine heirship, not to determine paternity. So I had already submitted all of these tests because Monty Wayne Nicholson, the guy, the writer and the former sheriff, he took me down to the Hall of Records in downtown L.A. and illegally parked in the front and said, run down to the basement to pick up these records, those court records that you need to use for your paternity. So go down there, and it's so creepy. It's like in downtown L.A. underground. There's like cobwebs and scary. And I went in there, and this lady handed me a file and was smiling like the sun. So I took the file, and it was his paternity test that he had done from a woman in Vegas that had a child, had all of the most modern records of his, that they could have of his. Anyway, long story short, testing through UCLA, going through Cellmark, and came back that everything matched. They tested my mom, but it was blood tests back then. We weren't swabbing in 1980 yet. It wasn't that advanced at all. You couldn't go to Target and find out who you are. So it was way different, way different. So anyway, everything matched except for one little piece that they didn't have it, a record for by a doctor, in Switzerland. So the pathologist said that everything matched, that he had to match. So I gave that into court. And what they did with the estate is they conceded for the sake of the case that I am his biological daughter, but I have no inheritable rights because he was not married to my mom. The only woman he ever married was Priscilla, which we know. And the only legitimate child he ever had was Lisa, which is all, you know, part of the story. They want to keep it that simple.
But they
didn't fight me.
They admitted you were the biological daughter. Really? And then,
of course, you can go look it up online.
Amazing.
But I have no inheritable rights.
That's so ridiculous.
Come on, Dr. John. It's complete karma. God knows what I did in my other lifetimes, but whatever. I still got the DNA.
I still
think like him. I still, you know, I don't sing like him. I missed that boat, but other than that, I'm doing just fine.
You know, the other thing, too, you mentioned, which is good, people don't realize back in that time, they didn't have the DNA swab tests and stuff. So, you know, you couldn't
people
have
aren't
a,
that
a
smart anymore. Everybody's, I know. Come on.
Yeah.
You had to go get a needle stuck in your arm at UCLA.
Yeah, I mean, you did every test that was possible at that time, right?
I mean, that's why they concede that I'm his. That's why they can never come against me. So my attorney was happy, and he said, Deborah, you won. You didn't win, you know, any of, you know, the financial aspects. And my mother had always told me, Deborah, that's his money, not yours, not mine. Don't care about it. So I never attached myself to his financial well-being. You know, I never thought, oh, well, my father's a guy in the white jumpsuit and I'm going to get money. No, I never thought like that at all. And so Other people do, because they assume, you know, that I should be, you know, walking around in a white jumpsuit, you know, living in Beverly Hills. But yeah. Although I have lived in Beverly Hills, you know.
Well, you know, let me interject. I've known you for years. You have one of the biggest hearts and compassionate
really?
Persons
because
that
I
I've ever known.
Really? Because I had someone tell me. Thank you, Dr. John, because I have someone I really love, and it tells me I have no heart at all. So
well,
thank
they
you
don't
for
know
that.
You like I know
it.
You. I mean, you. So, you know, to be honest with you, if someone said to me, let's say I was in your position, and someone said to me, I was, I said I'm the son of this person, and they said, well, you got two choices. You can either get the money, or we'll definitely admit that you're the biological person. I would go with the biological person. I think that's more important.
Believe me,
the money can be spent. You know?
It's much better. Do you know how much trouble? Look, they protected me. The colonel said, you are not going to have a 16-year-old wife and a little baby that's with another family that's married, da-da-da. It wasn't like today at all. He said, you can have your, you know, this, your fame and your life, but this girl does not exist. You do not have a child. Do you understand me? You have no daughter. You have no child. And even though he kept tabs on me, and I remember, you know, when I was really small and in Florida, like, you know, jumping up in his arms, and I was little. But once I was able to just talk and, you know, tell things, mm-hmm. I was, you know, kind of went away. But I will never forget the time that I did spend with him. And Gene Smith, who was his first cousin, you know, he and I got so close. He went to court with me. He, you know, told the courts that, you know, yes, he was there when, you know, my father and mother sent him on his way so they could be alone. Because he drove for my father. He had a sleeping disorder, so Gene was with him all the time. And my grandmother wanted Gene there because, you know, he couldn't get up and go around walking in the middle of the night, which he did.
You know, I wanted to ask you, was there any question about appealing it afterwards, and he sort
of... Well, yeah, I did. Let me explain that little piece of information. Don't forget that Graceland is the second most visited house in the United States of our still great America, and, you know, there's a lot at stake, so you can't have some intruder, you know, and also... Mm-hmm. What happened was I did appeal it, and now you ready for this? Are you all sitting down?
Yeah.
Actually, I'm so neutral because things are so intense that I did appeal it, actually. And it went out in all the newspapers that I had been dismissed without merit. But they forgot to tell you that the judge that heard my case, he was the probate judge, and there are only like three in Memphis, and he'd been there all of his life in the tiny little office and in the tiny little courthouse in Memphis. And he had been the judge when the will was probated. And so he should have recused himself, but he didn't. So he comes into the courtroom, sits down in his black robe and his gavel. I thought, oh my gosh, just let him look at me. If he just looks at me, everything will be great. It's going to be great. He didn't even look at me. He slammed down his gavel
really?
And he said, dismissed without merit. So the first thing came down that said that I was not his daughter and I could not be his daughter. I went to a higher court and the court of appeals in Tennessee, are you sitting down, said, yes, I am, and I can be, and I can be legitimated. But nobody sent me that information. And then fast forward to, that was 1988. So 2014, I was seeing someone who said, you got to go get those court records. Because when I would call back in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. the court clerk would tell me my case was sealed for 50 years. And I said, what do you mean? It's my case. She goes, no, it's a Presley case. So long story short, I finally got
what?
That woman died. Hold on. Yeah, that woman died.
God.
That woman finally died, who was in probate. I'm sure people know who she is there, but she was in the office forever. She finally died, uh-huh. And a sweet little girl came, and I called. She said, oh, Miss Deborah, I'll just go look for him. So she calls me back, the little court clerk, and she said, it's all over the courthouse. It's just, she goes, it's the courtroom, the clerk's office. It's like it's been ransacked. I can find part of your case. So lo and behold, she ended up sending me registered copies of what she could find, which didn't include the medical tests, though. It did include all the affidavits from my cousin and my, but listen to this part. This is the best part. There was a document in those papers that the Court of Appeals in 1980, after the appeal, remanded me to come back into Memphis to get legitimated. I never saw that document until 2014.
Really?
So I never went back in. And here's the other question. If I, but here's my thing to you. You just talked about just knowing your natural as opposed to the legal stuff. Even if I do that, now here's the question, Dr. John. Does lawful mean legitimate? Because in the will that they probated, which isn't the real will, by the way, the real will was a handwritten will that no one ever saw again once some people came into town and that day after the departure. It says in the will that was written, he leaves everything to, oh my God, I'm going to get emotional, to Lisa Marie and any other lawful issue that I might have to be divided into separate and equal trust. Now, in my mind, in Larry Geller's mind, and in Gene's mind, he meant me because I would be, if I could prove that I was his legitimate, medically, that would make me lawful. But I would only be lawful in the state of Tennessee if my parents had married. So what if I go back and cause a circus? I wouldn't inherit, and I already know who I am. So why would I go back just to say, legitimate me lawful? And no, he didn't marry my mom. She was married to another man at the time, which makes me legitimately. So who wants to waste their life? And trust me, nobody in their right mind would want to be me because it hasn't brought me a whole lot except for spiritual awareness, because it's not that easy to be his when you're when you're not lawful.
I know. No, I agree with you.
By man's law, but I'll tell you what, I'm not a Scientologist, thank God.
Yeah, you know, you're lucky. You're smart, because a lot of times when you're trying to fight City Hall or whoever, it's not worth it because it destroys you in the end, you know? And
there's no point. He would tell me I have the best of him. I also have his temper. I would trade that for, a few million dollars. I'd like to be able to think before I blow up. But,
Did you ever talk to anybody
I'm
going to
be
family?
Honest with you. Of course, Gene Smith was his first cousin. They moved from Mississippi. Gene's father was my father's mother's brother. They moved from Tupelo to Memphis together when they were little tiny boys. And Gene was 6 weeks older. So he was like the brother that my father lost. He lost his twin, but Gene was 6 weeks older, and they were truly like brothers. They lived together. Gene was with him all the time. Even at my conception, he got, kicked out of out for a while, a few days. He was gone in and out. But anyway, sorry. The truth is that, what I inherited is, my who and what I am. And no, I'm not out singing on stage, and I'm not out there trying to do any of that, although I did try two or three times, and I just started crying. Because I don't want to hear my voice. I don't want to hear any vibratos or any crazy shit. And excuse my language, we're on the thing. But the people are really, really don't want me to exist at all. You know what I mean? It's like, she's not real. Excuse me.
Yeah, you know what's good about you, too? What I've learned is you're a very spiritual person. And you've been on, most of my teaching and work now is spiritual, helping people on the spiritual path and opening up your awareness. You're like that,
But let me just tell you, here's what I know. I believe that we choose, plan this life before we're born. And knowledge is the only reason we exist in any form. And intelligence means more than anything else. And it's like, I don't know how to explain it other than to say that there's so much more than just, fame. Fame, is a very destructive energy. And
power.
But here's
power.
I'm saying.
Let me just interject this. One of my best closest friend was, and you know this because we've been friends, as a Secret Service agent to four U.S. presidents and JFK, and we were writing a book together. And he was the one who discovered the bullet hole in the front windshield. I should do a show on that, but he passed away.
Yes, you
and
should.
I never forget, because we were like buddy buddies. He really was my best friend. And I never forget when Joe Paolella said to me, John, power and fame are the greatest aphrodisiacs. Because I always said to him, how come all these women were attracted to Kennedy and Johnson, you know, all these people? And I mean, he said it's the power. And it's very interesting. I never realized that.
It's true, but also intelligence creates power, because there's also, you know, really negative and bad power. But my whole point to you was, I believe that every single one of us as souls, we choose what planet we're born on, what, you know, what state we're born in, what country we're born in, who our parents are. We choose all of it so that we can learn. And Earth is school. And I think that's just, you know, the whole thing. And it's not easy, though, because, and he was not completely happy. He wanted to share what you're telling people right now. He wanted to be a preacher. I'm not really a preacher, but profess the truth. And the colonel said, shut up and sing. I mean, he was really into, you know, everything you're talking about.
That's,
he could touch people and heal them.
Yeah, from talking to you and the people that I've contacted that knew him, and I got the impression, I bet we would have got along really well together, because I had a lot of the church.
And just to make it a little bit more crazy, the person that I've been talking to for years that is him, and supposedly he's got to, you know, hide out to be safe or whatever, he's actually listening right now. So if you want to say anything never know.
Wow.
Don't rule it out unless you can prove it.
The other thing I wanted to ask you that, and I heard that, you know, there's really substance to this, that Elvis didn't die. He was working with the government, the CIA, and they gave him a new identity. Is there any truth to that? Can you comment on that?
Yeah, actually, there's complete truth to that, because what he did is, you know, he was so idealistic, and he really, like, identified with Captain Marvel. And I don't know that much about Captain Marvel, but I do find it interesting. He did have, you know, black hair and wear a cape in the original cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I live in Hollywood in Los Angeles, I have nothing to do with it, so I don't know anything about any of that stuff. But my point is, he wanted to help people. So when he was in Vegas and he saw that there were people selling his stepbrothers cocaine and street drugs, he actually thought that, you know, his prescription drugs were not illegal because they were coming from a doctor. And whatever however you want to judge it, that's the way he thought. So he really thought that he could take down the Vegas mafia because he was who he was and be undercover, and he was over-identifying with Captain Marvel. So he ended up biting off more than he could chew, and someone got into the house and cut the head off Lisa Marie's favorite teddy bear and wrote a note that that's going to be Lisa.
Oh, you're
if
kidding.
He didn't back,
oh, my God.
If he didn't back off. He didn't back off. So what's he going to do? And all those people saying, oh, he's so heavy and fat. He wore a bulletproof vest. He had a pistol in his boot on stage. Can
wow.
you imagine going in front of 50,000 people when you just, like, you know, ate the, you know, drug ring in Vegas, and it's not that big a secret, and people stole his daddy's airplane and stole the airplane from his daddy and wouldn't give it back. He really was in a lot of trouble. So some people say, well, he committed suicide or whatever, but you know what? Gene Smith, my cousin, his cousin with him since the womb, of, you know, basically, told me that my father called him into the kitchen 2 weeks before, and he was crying. And he said, I have to go, and I will not see you anymore. So I'm not going to say yes or no, but I will say that I just heard you say you had a piece of fabric that Jesus may have bled on. So, you know, take it from there.
That's
anything is possible.
Yeah.
Anything,
you know,
is possible.
Because, it's very common, you know, witness protection or having people fake a death. So, you know, the mafia, or whoever doesn't, you know, go after them. And, you know, it's not out of the bounds of credibility. So I thought,
it's also interesting that, you know, his body was taken to the some location in August 16th. And then the next day, I mean, in October, they bring him back to the house, and it's not even really zoned for bodies there, and there's a river nearby, and there's all these things that don't make sense. And Gene told me that body was, like, I had to laugh. He said that there was an air conditioning underneath it that was delivered the day before with the coffin, and they almost fell down. The pallbearers trying to lift it because it was trying to keep the wax dummy. And they only showed it for like one day, and then they took him away. But, you know,
yeah,
I have to live in duality. I have to live in duality.
Yeah.
So, yes and
yeah,
no.
I just thought of something. I thought you may have had an angle, but it wouldn't work. The idea is that if you could get legally the body to be exhumed and get a sample and your DNA, but if it's not them,
I haven't thought about that.
Really? I mean, maybe, you know, because I taught biochemistry and I worked at in the genetics lab, and obviously thinking,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, you can have DNA that's 2,000 years old. Yeah,
exactly. I already got the blood that I need, and that still isn't going to make him marry my mama.
You know,
I told the story.
I said I did. Have you done that? Did you actually do a DNA test? That's an interesting thing.
I did a blood test. I did blood.
Okay, let me suggest something to you if you haven't. But, you know, like, I don't know. There's different ones of MyHeritage, 23andMe, you know, whatever. They don't cost that much. Where you can just get your DNA done, and it would be interesting.
I did that with Inside Edition,
What that tells
me, though, that I was like 95% Western European. It didn't break it down, 3% Nigerian.
If you could get someone else in this family to do the same test, I'm just suggesting possibilities. I don't know. Then maybe
as far as I'm concerned, I've proven everything I need to prove, and I'm not going to court for inheritance I could put myself, you know, through a lot of stuff.
Deborah, I'm just saying it would be fun because I had mine done, and I found some surprises. Oh, I got to say this. I won't mention the person's name.
I did too.
somebody I know. And it's a relative had the DNA test done, and it turned out he found a daughter he never knew he had. So,
oh my God,
you know,
there was probably a sister.
Yeah. It's always a danger.
It's
so
crazy.
I posted on Facebook a while ago. I can't remember the exact post, but I said I really did have my DNA test back, and I said it came back. I'm 1/4 fox terrier, 2/3 bloodhound, 1/4 dachshund. And I said, you know what? I shouldn't have left the swabs near my dog dish before I sent them in, you know?
Oh, my God, that's true. And, you know, too, you know, yeah. I was close to Gene. I was very close to Gene. And as far as I'm concerned, Gene is as close as I can get. And there are cousins that I communicate with. And I'm content with, you know, with the ways that things are. And I don't want to spend my whole time, you know, just trying to prove it to somebody that's not me, because I know who I am. And people who know me, it was enough for the court.
Yeah, no, I just think it would be fun. It was fun for me because I was actually curious. People have told me that I have a bloodline with the Templars, and, you know, because, you know, I've been following that and very interested. And I'm not sure I believe in reincarnation or maybe it's in the DNA, but I think I have a connection with the Templars for many reasons I won't go into. And it turned out that my DNA test did show a lot of countries that the Templars were from.
France and Normandy. Well,
yeah,
that
I thought it'd be like 100%.
I
thought it'd be 100% Sicilian, you know? Right? You know, but it was more than 50%. And also, you know, I was a Sufi for many years. I was very interested in Sufism, studied from one of the top Sufis in the United States. He used to give me private video lessons and all kinds of things. And I did have a bloodline in the Iran area, and one of my closest friends lives there. So it was very interesting. I mean, we were from Spain. So I'm just saying
that's
it could
funny.
Be a lot of fun for you. And
no,
then they give you names of
did.
Relatives, you know?
I didn't see that part of the report, but I did do it with Inside Edition did it last summer with me, but it was a lot of Scottish, a lot of Irish, a lot of, get this, like 2% Nigerian.
Interesting. Oh, they love me over in Nigeria. They gave me an honorary doctorate in religion.
Oh, my God.
threw in the garbage as soon as
it's true. Let me tell you something funny. You know, the soul knows. But my father wasn't even really a Presley because he had a great-great-great-great-great-grandmother that had 13 illegitimate kids, and she just decided to call them that. So, you know, but then how does that explain me going back to Scotland? So it's all kind of crazy to me. And it's like,
wow.
You know, our DNA, I mean, it's, you know, and that's all shifting anyway, isn't it? We're going from carbon to crystal or something. Isn't that true?
Well, you know, it's so funny, though. You know, people are listening. They got to know we're good friends because when we talk, we always joke around and we have a lot of fun together. You know?
Yeah, we do.
You got to take it with a little humor, which you do. You've gone through so much, you know, and a lot of suffering, a lot of anguish, fighting everyone, and I think you're at a place in your life where you have this wisdom, this contentment to say, I've done what I needed to do to prove to myself who I am. I don't need to go any further, and I'm happy. And now I'm on my spiritual search, and that's what I feel about you, you know, and that's admirable.
The first page of my book, and this is funny because this came to me last night, and I know it's my grandmother. My grandmother said to my father one time, and like I said, I opened my book with this quote. She said, as I think I've already told you this, she said, you know, it doesn't matter what anyone says. It really doesn't. You know who you are. And so even when people were saying, you know, he's not good and he can't sing, people actually said he couldn't sing. But his soul, you know, continued on, and he, you know, we always end up where we're supposed to be. Exactly. And just think about it. He's more of an image now than anything. And if he is alive and he can't come because, you know, his image was sold to the people that own American Idol. That's why American Idol came on in the United States. They sold his image, 85%. Priscilla and Lisa don't even own his image, you know. I mean, please, Viagra commercials and, you know. Yeah, they don't even own it. And my poor sister, she's broke anyway. So it doesn't matter. You know, it's about spiritual wealth, and I know that I agreed to this, and I'm glad I was protected from the fame. I'm glad I was protected from not being able to see him. Poor little Lisa, she would sit out his out front of his bedroom door, and he wouldn't come out. He was tired. I mean, you know, I was protected in many ways. And my mother, even though she was from the South, she would have the astrology book underneath the couch and the Bible on the coffee table. So I was always getting all of it, you know what I mean? And so it really has served me well.
No, interesting. Well, you know, that's I think that's why we're such good friends, and we really enjoy each other's company because we have the same kind of approach to life, that it's the spiritual path, the spiritual truth that's important. You know, it's funny. I mean, We know we're going to die. Everybody died. Everybody
knows
they're going to die.
Our bodies are going to die. We are
going to
die.
Right.
Our bodies are going to die.
Now,
yeah.
I always said our greatest asset, and you said this before, but used a different word, I think, is consciousness, that we have consciousness, you know? And we hope that consciousness continues to live on. And I'm not sure about reincarnation, to be honest with you. I always say I don't really think anybody knows what happens when we die. I think it's something so beyond us. Okay, being a neurophysiologist, I can explain that a dozen different ways. Even people that speak in different languages, that remember the town. I won't go into it now, but I can explain it many alternative ways. And so, you know, Occam's razor is always the simplest explanation, and I can explain it more simpler than reincarnation. Did you know when I was a kid, you remember the Johnny Carson show, right? The Tonight Show?
Of course.
And,
And
in fact, I studied under Ed Shaughnessy, the drummer there, and I played with Clark Terry from the Tonight Show. I was, you know, a musician. So not to brag, but I never forgot the one show Johnny Carson had a reincarnation expert on. And he asked Johnny Carson, if you were going to come back as anybody, who would you come back as? And he said, my ex-wife's lawyer.
Uh-huh, I saw that. I did hear that. Okay, but you know what? Even I did not know that you didn't believe in reincarnation, because to me,
it makes complete sense
to me.
Yeah, I'm 50-50. Half my life I believed in reincarnation, and probably half I believed in maybe some kind of heaven, hell, or other dimension. And another 50% I didn't know, and 50% is I need a remedial math class so I can add up my percentages.
You're funny.
I got to be honest, and I know a lot of people listen to my show because of the paranormal aspect, but I have to say in all honesty, I honestly don't feel I have the answers to any of the big questions in life, for sure. I mean, it's all speculation. Is there a God? Will we live after, continue to live after we die? Is there psychic ability? I mean, all these things, nobody really knows for sure. There's speculation. There's something like 50,000 religions that say different things about life after death. Well, who's right? Maybe none of them are. But that doesn't matter. We have within our heart that drive to find out who we are, right, Deborah? We want to know, even, and we can't stop it. It's almost an obsession. So I don't say I don't believe in things. Like I said, I'd like to see evidence, but I'm going to have on. I've been trying to get. There's so many interesting things. The lady who worked in black ops, but I don't think she wants to come on because she's got a big position. But I'm going to have one of my best friend now is a former NSA cryptologist, and we worked together decoding manuscripts. And he actually invented cyber war, believe it or not. Okay, for the country under Reagan.
Wow, that's
heavy. He wrote. Yeah, where cyber war came from? Well, we're really digressing, but we do this when we talk. Cyber war, the movie War Games, did you remember that back in the 80s?
Yes.
Reagan saw War Games, and he asked his Joint Chiefs of Staff, John Vesey, who was the Chief of Staff at that time, General Vesey, says, did any of you ever see the movie? And they all said no. And he said, and he explained it, and he said, is this something our country should get into? And Vesey was, again, head of the Navy, too. My friend was a captain in the Navy, head of Russian intelligence, wrote a report saying that cyber war, or just, you know, computer warfare is the warfare of the future. And you won't read this in any textbook. He called it cyber battle, but that name never took.
Wow.
And it was cyber war.
Wow.
So I'm trying to think, how did I digress this far? Oh, the idea of that, there's been so many experiments, so many thoughts about life and death. And this guy, this NSA guy I'm working with, is very spiritual and got me working on the holographic method, the holographic theory of the universe, in which I'm trying to unite paranormal and scientific laws, which hasn't been done before, using mathematics. And he was my inspiration.
But isn't that what quantum is?
Quantum is part of
both?
It. The thought is that the universe is a two-dimensional, like a sphere, okay? And we live on this two-dimensional sphere is like a holographic plate. And when you shine light on it, it projects a three-dimensional image inside, which we know is not real. But in this case, that would be a real physical reality. And actually it ties in with Stephen Hawking and black holes and relativity, which – and string theory is my specialty, and it gets really weird, but you have to have the mathematics, and I don't have that level of mathematics. I forgot most of it from college. My son was a math professor at UCLA, so I'm trying to work on that. But it was interesting that, here's a guy in the NSA, a top cryptologist who's retired, I've been working with, is the one who really has pushed me in this whole metaphysical direction. So, I mean, going back to Elvis, how many people have really considered he was a very spiritual person? He was searching for the truth, for wisdom. So I think that's what our nature is, Deborah, and that's
all
why
the time.
You
and,
made
and
your
he,
decision.
And all the time, Clay, all the time, and he believed in UFOs. I mean, my mother raised me. I mean, I've seen her. I've seen them with her. I've seen them in my adult time. But, the world is so – it's so interesting because I just think that the evolution of the soul is such a process for each individual energy that, everything is true and everything is not. You know what I mean? I mean, one thing that is everybody's reality is different and individual to that being. And because we want to have some kind of a social connection, which is really sad at this point, but it's like, there's a psychic connection in there. What if everything went down technologically right now? I don't even know my daughter's phone number, okay? So I'm saying our dependency, I don't know if you believe in Atlantis and all that, but every single civilization has gone completely down. But we still rise up as a consciousness and as a human race. And so I just find it all fascinating. It's like we're all crawling, but we're all jet planes too.
You know, it's so funny you said that, because a good friend of mine, she's from Norway, one of the smartest people I've known on Facebook, and she just posted something like that, and I said to her, you're right. She said, no civilization has ever survived. They've all have fallen. I mean, it's a simple statement, but it's really profound thinking that no civilization has ever lasted, you know?
It's hard when you're thinking in linear time, when you're sitting here in a physical body right now in Minnesota, and I'm sitting here in a physical body in Los Angeles. It is hard to consider, but the same energy that drives our speaking of consciousness is the same energy that keeps on coming back to do it again. So you're telling me you don't believe in Lemuria and Atlantis? Tell me you do.
Let me put it this way. I want to see evidence for it. It's like Atlantis. I've read every book on Atlantis since the 1800s because it fascinated me. Atlantis has been found everywhere, claimed to be from the North Pole to the South Pole to Antarctica. I mean, so nobody even knows even the continent that could be in the location. I did fly over the Bermuda Triangle a couple times. I didn't notice anything. I think I had too much vodka, so, but otherwise it was a nice flight.
I want to tell you real quick just something about my mom. Let me tell you.
Oh,
this.
By the way, Deborah, I got to end the show within a minute because I'm supposed to end 8 minutes before. So maybe we can have you on another time and you could tell that story. But I wanted to find out, do you want to give out any contact information if people wanted to get in touch with you,
or you want them to write to me and I'll pass it on to you? Yeah, you can find
me
on Facebook, and I'm still looking for a publisher, and if I don't find one, then I'm just going to go ahead and do it myself, but I'll make that more known later. Right now, I'm just kind of trying to stay under the radar pretty much. Enjoy the doves and the sparrows.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, you really got to write a book.
I already have.
Could you put it out there, you know? Well, I mean, is it all done, completed? Oh, okay.
It's all done, and I have one of the best agents in the world. I'm just waiting on a publisher, and I just want to make sure that the powers that be, you know, it depends on, you know, what's going to be, but it'll come one way or the other.
Anyway, well, listen, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on to the show tonight. I was looking forward to this, and I know a lot of people, I tell you, I've gotten probably one of the biggest responses to you coming on my Facebook about people being excited. And I've done radio for about 5 years, and you're always one of the best.
Well,
and,
I love it. I am my father's daughter, and we said the things, you know, we needed to say.
Well, listen, Deborah, thank you so much, and let's keep in touch, and maybe I'd love to continue with this another time and have you back on
and tell
some more stories. And you have
okay,
to deal with my
you.
Jokes if you don't mind. Take care, Deborah.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Okay.
That was Deborah Presley, and I'm sure you enjoyed the show as much as I have. And we're going to be back next week, same time, Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm not sure what I'm going to do next week. I'm wondering maybe something on the Shroud, but I wasn't planning on having a guest, and so either the Shroud or maybe something with the cryptology. But anyway, I want to wish all of you a happy Easter or whatever holiday you're celebrating. And thank you for listening. And until next time, may God be with you.